Researchers have not yet pinpointed the cause of autism spectrum disorder, but more and more children are being diagnosed with autism today. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. In 1970, I was looking at some figures, there only one child in 10,000 was diagnosed with autism. And according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, today that number is 1 in 59, which is a big difference. Some experts think that the rise could be caused by improved autism identification. And so we'll be exploring the steps to a diagnosis, the types of intervention, services that are out there, what you can do, what your family can do to support your child along the way, or maybe your grandchild. Two experts in the studio with us today, Aaron Thompson, clinical social worker and parent coach in the autism treatment programs at the Waisman Center at the UW-Madison. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Paula Perez is a social worker, clinical coordinator for the Waisman Center's Autism and Developmental Disabilities Clinic. And Paula, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
And you can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the types of services for a child on the autism spectrum, perhaps? Maybe you're waiting for intervention services to begin. How's that going? What's your story about caring for a child with autism? And maybe what have you learned through this journey? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And as I was talking about earlier, the CDC statistics are 1 in 59 children diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. And I think we know that it's a whole lot more common, even if our diagnosis has improved. And I'm wondering why that is the case. Aaron, do you want to take that?
Yeah, so I think a big piece of it is that kids, there are always folks on the autism spectrum who went undiagnosed. I think the way the diagnostic screening is occurring and the way people are thinking about autism, more of those kids are getting a diagnosis, which actually leads to better options for services. And so folks are able to access intervention because they have that diagnosis. I think previously, as you were mentioning, in the 70s and 80s, most of the folks who were getting diagnosed with autism were on the very severe end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And so they were the only folks getting a diagnosis, versus now we really look at that full spectrum from kids who have pretty average intelligence and have some verbal skills, but still have symptoms and traits of autism, all the way to folks who are on the nonverbal, need a high level of support and have very significant autism. It had been that really significant population that's always been diagnosed, but it's now that full range that's getting a diagnosis.
Yeah. Well, on either end, maybe you could just spend a little more time talking about someone with on the severe end, kind of how is that behavior exhibited and on the other end. Paula, you want to talk about that?
Sure. So we see children in our clinics. We do diagnostic evaluations, and children are referred often with concerns with development with their communication, social skills, parents identifying unusual behaviors. And so those would be, key things to look for. And talk to your doctors about if parents are seeing unusual behaviors that they're concerned about.
Yeah, okay. Well, the diagnosis, though, I imagine there's various stages of testing in confirming a diagnosis. And so those are the kinds of behaviors you're looking for, or what?
Well, so the stages, one being, making sure that if parents are concerned or providers who are following children, that there's screening going on. All children should be having some form of screening for developmental delays at their well-child visits. And those screeners will also pick up, if there's concerns for for possible autism, there are specific screeners such as the MCHAT that primary care physicians can definitely use to identify that, whether that's a risk. And by screening early, then families can be referred for a full evaluation earlier.
Is an early intervention, well, what does that mean? And is it really important, or why is it important?
So there's a couple of different layers of early intervention. So if a child is identified as having a developmental disability or developmental delay, oftentimes where parents first go is to their pediatrician or to the local birth to three programs. And that can be a place to really figure out is there's what all is going on for this child. If an autism spectrum disorder is diagnosed, then what families are often seeking out is a comprehensive level of service, which is really looking at getting between 25 and 40 hours a week of intensive one-on-one autism treatment, whether that's happening in your home or in a center. And the idea behind that is that you're really looking at all of the areas of development for that child that's impacted by autism, and teaching that child specific strategies and skills to help address some of those challenges. And then also thinking about what strategies are we giving parents, and the, you know, if a child's in childcare or home with a grandparent, who how to interact with that child to help best elicit those more positive social behaviors.
Okay. Well, Mary in Greendale has something for us to add here, I think, to the conversation. Mary, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to call and let all those newly diagnosed parents know that there is hope for these kids. I actually have a daughter who is in her 30s. So when the autism diagnosis came through, she was almost two, had lost her speech. The doctors weren't quite sure what was going on. By the time she was four, her speech had come back, but a lot of the behaviors started showing up. Looking forward now, she is an amazing child. And I guess what I would just like to do is encourage people out there that we don't really know neurologically what's going on in there, but they are learning every day. And I really consider them kind of our heroes, because they have to compensate for this world that is so bright and so noisy and so, you know, feely. And, you know, they have to overcompensate just to try to get along in this world. And I really look at my daughter as, you know, just an amazing person. She's got quite the sense of humor. And she, you know, I often said if I could get in her brain for 5 minutes, how much more I would know what was going on. And I just think that, you know, with today's technology, what they're doing with ABA therapy, which really did not exist back in the day when she was diagnosed, I think these kids have such an advantage to being very productive citizens. So all the newly diagnosed and parents, I hope you can just hang in there, because they're doing amazing things.
Boy, I'm really glad you called. Mary, thank you so much for that call and maybe some comments. Aaron, you have a comment from you?
You know, I so appreciate that perspective of being on the other side and having an adult child and being able to recognize her strengths, and also being able to recognize, you know, in some ways, getting a diagnosis now is probably easier than it was for Mary and her daughter, because there is greater access to services and greater understanding of some treatment models. I think statewide it can get challenging, because depending on where you live in the state of Wisconsin, your options for services and resources can be a little bit limited. But know that there are resources out there. I think there's just a greater understanding of autism spectrum disorders within the public school system. And so the level of care that you're able to get, I think, is so much greater. You know, I think parents like Mary really trailblazed for parents who are getting a diagnosis today.
Yeah. And thank you again, Mary. I really appreciate that call. I want to give Steve essentially, I want to get his question out there. He wonders if the chance of autism increases with the age of either parent. So maybe you have one parent younger than the other, or maybe both parents are older or younger. Does age play any kind of a role here? We'll go to you for that.
Yeah, I would say I'm not an expert researcher, but there have been studies that look at that too. But a lot of studies are indicating, you know, there's genetic factors, environmental. So, but but that's certainly been something looked at.
When you visit the pediatrician, should you be looking for signs of, I mean, when on a visit, should they, you know, should they refer a family to a specialist if they, you know, think further testing is needed? What?
So if you go to your pediatrician, it's really important to talk about your child's social development. Are they interested in the people around them? Are they doing lots of smiling and cooing and back and forth engagement with the world around them? What's their play like with other children as well as with toys and objects? Are they using things in the typical way that you would expect a preschooler or a toddler to be playing with toys and with other children? If you've got concerns about that, bring that to your pediatrician. They should be doing screening at 18 and 24 months, specifically around autism. If that doesn't happen, certainly ask your pediatrician specifically for that screening. The other thing is, if you've got those concerns and you do a screener and there's concerns, ask your pediatrician to make the referral now. We can look at the diagnosis. The earlier we can look at the diagnosis, the earlier that children can access intervention services. And so, you know, I think sometimes as a parent, you want to watch and wait and make sure that you're not overreacting or overthinking things. But getting the answer sooner actually will give you greater access to resources.
Thinking about our young daughter, who was, you know, exhibiting some traits that didn't seem right, and we were worried about that, but subsequent look at her showed that she was having ear infections, and that was affecting her speech, for example, and how she spoke, and you know, we were able to obviously resolve that, and so we had a good outcome. Not always do we have a good outcome. Erin Thompson, one of our guests today, and Paula Perez, the other guest from the Weizmann Center at the UW-Madison. And they're going to be with us right up until 12:30 today as we talk about autism services and support to families. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. Thanks so much for being with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, talking about the support services around autism and how families can get connected to resources and the types of interventions for someone on the spectrum. Two guests for you, a couple of experts here. Erin Thompson, a clinical social worker, a parent coach in the autism treatment programs at the Weizmann Center. Paula Perez is a social worker, clinic coordinator for Weizmann's Autism and Developmental Disabilities Clinic. So as I talk with them, I hope you'll join in too. What questions do you have about therapies for your autistic child or grandchild? What do you want to know about the types of services? Are you waiting for intervention services to begin? What's your story about caring for a child with autism? We heard a wonderful story from Mary in Greendale just before our news break. What have you learned? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And I mentioned services. Maybe we should talk about, there's quite a range of services, is there not?
So there's two main forms of services. So for children who are under the age of 5, we really look at a comprehensive or intensive level of services. So somewhere between 25 and 40 hours a week of service. And that would be working one-to-one with a child, working with them in in their daycare setting, working with them at home, working with them in a center-based program, but really focused on intensive teaching with that child. For children who are school age and above, we look at a focused or non-intensive level of services, which is usually defined as anywhere less than 20 hours a week of service, knowing that children are in school all day long. And so thinking about what are more specific skills that they need to work on, more specific strategies that the family might need to be successful. So any services that you would access that are specific to autism treatment would either be at that higher level for younger children or that less intensive level for children who are in school all day.
And something struck me as you were talking, I was wondering, is this something, autism, is it something that can... I don't know if strike's the right word, but at a later point in someone's life? Or is it something that they probably started with and maybe it just wasn't diagnosed until they were a little older? Paula, you want to talk about that?
Well, sure. I was going to say, we definitely, youth are diagnosed later in life, and oftentimes, you know, there's been other diagnoses that they've had along the way.
Okay.
I would say we hear a lot about where, you know, there's been diagnosis of ADHD or learning disabilities or other mental health diagnoses, but things are still not really answering, you know, why is this happening or why are they struggling with peers or school. And so when we get referrals a lot later, it is kids who the symptoms were there, it just was not as clear cut at the time. Or it happens. It's not so much that it appears later, it just becomes more clear as they get older and
other things come up. And I'm, you know, and as I was listening to Aaron talk about 40 hours, I mean, that's a lot of
It's a full-time job.
it's a full-time job, and there not every place has people with your wonderful skills. So I would think the numbers of people who are available to provide that kind of service may be limited. So there's probably waiting lists.
There are waiting, and the other reality is many of the services for young children are home-based services, so it requires a parent or a grandparent or an aunt or another adult to be present in the home while those services are being provided, which can sometimes be a real barrier for families in accessing services, because there's competing needs if parents need to work and also want to access the best possible treatment for their child. And so it's where possible, finding that goodness of fit of a provider who's able to meet that family's needs and make sure that the family's able to meet all of their other needs, and make sure that they're getting all of those things in place. I think it can be more challenging the more rural your community is, just because there's fewer providers in the area.
And to what extent do insurances, and I know they're probably all different, but to what extent will insurance cover some of these costs, which have to be pretty large, I would think? Paula?
I can talk about that. Autism Treatment Services is covered both by private insurances and medical assistance. And that can, you know, the coverage can vary from state to state, but Wisconsin, we have both an insurance mandate that requires private insurers, group programs that are Wisconsin-based to cover Autism Treatment Services. And we also have medical assistance is also required to pay for behavioral services. So
there's some help there financially for families that are in that circumstance.
Yes.
So what, you know, the other thing that came to my mind, and I'm thinking about this, let's say you have one child with autism, but then you have one other child or maybe two or three other children in the home with you who do not have autism, perhaps, and the family dynamic has to be... I would hope that there's help for families in sort of the family situation of dealing with that and understanding it and so forth.
So some of it is really going to be dependent on the age of your other children, but really thinking about, is there a way to carve out specific one-on-one time with your other children that you're able to really give them your undivided attention? Because we know that when a child has a disability, that often ends up taking up a lot of parents' energy, very understandably. Sure. So really thinking about how do we make sure that we're giving some focused attention to our typically developing children? Also thinking about resources like SIB shops and connecting with your autism providers.
SIB shops?
So SIB shops are workshops specifically for children who have a sibling with a disability.
Ah.
And so you get a chance to get together, do fun activities, do a little bit of learning with other children who have a similar family to yours. And so it's really meant to be a place of support and resource. So your local Autism Society or the Autism Society of Wisconsin can help you find that information. Certainly if your autism treatment provider or the Wiseman Resource Center or any of the regional centers in the state of Wisconsin can help connect you to those resources.
Should take some more calls. By the way, you can join in too if you have an experience to share or a question to ask. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. And let's go to Lisa in Janesville. Lisa, thank you for calling.
Hi, I was just calling about girls with autism. Both of my children are diagnosed with high-functioning autism. My son was diagnosed at 9. My daughter, I noticed issues when she was younger, but she didn't present in a lot of ways as my son did. We made a major move, and in that major move, other characteristics came forward much more. And we learned through the diagnosis process that girls obviously not only present very differently, but often are not diagnosed until they either hit puberty or they leave home. And the stress of the changes in their life cause the symptoms to present much more clearly.
Interesting. How does Aaron or Paulo, maybe I go to you, how may those symptoms be different between a young girl and a young boy?
Well, the diagnosis is definitely like more common in boys, but with girls, I think, and the caller was mentioning, you know, the things looked a little different, and it appears girls compensate a little better, you know, socially, and so maybe, you know, the symptoms aren't as clear and they aren't showing the more, you know,
extreme
the
symptoms signs, yeah.
that people are more accustomed to seeing, or the behaviors. And so it isn't until a little later that starts to show up. And so, but we are definitely seeing more and more awareness to that as well. And so hearing more about that, more parents asking for referrals. So, but we're still learning some more about that.
Yeah, and so in your case, how are your youngsters doing? We may have lost Lisa. Sorry. We will take some other calls too. You can join in 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Talking about diagnosis, that of course that's been coming up here pretty regularly. Laura wondered through email, what's the difference between a medical diagnosis and an educational diagnosis?
So a medical diagnosis is needed to be able to access treatment through your insurance company.
Okay.
An educational diagnosis allows you to access services through your local public school system. And so sometimes we'll see kids who have a medical diagnosis but really are thriving in that school environment, and so they don't have an educational diagnosis of autism. They're doing well academically, they're doing well fairly well socially. The structure of school sometimes helps kids, particularly on that higher functioning end of the spectrum, to be very successful. Sometimes what happens on the flip side is that a child is starting to have challenges at school. The school district does an evaluation for special education services, gives that educational autism diagnosis, and then that then brings the parent back to their pediatrician to seek out whether or not a medical diagnosis fits.
Okay, that makes more that makes sense to me. Paula, you wanted to add to that.
And I would add, I often tell families to think of it, because it is confusing. We get a lot of families who call and say, well, my child's already been diagnosed, what do I have to do this? And really explaining the school services, that's more of a categorical description versus a true medical diagnosis. So just really, because the word diagnosis gets in there, and the school one's not technically a full-on diagnosis.
All right, there we go. Kathy and Jackson, your turn. Thanks for calling, Kathy.
Good morning. I have a grandson that is 5 years old, and he was diagnosed with autism in the first few months of his life. He started with his pediatrician and then went through the medical center and children's hospital in Milwaukee.
Yep.
And he worked with the Birth to Three program for 3 years. It was fantastic. Then when he reached the age of 3, he began working with the WEAP program, WEAP, Wisconsin Early Autism Project.
Mm-hmm.
And that treatment took place in his home. And my son had to make a space in his home, a room for the person to come and do the therapy. And we've been through a number of therapists. My grandson is now in kindergarten in the Menominee Falls School District at Shady Lane. Fantastic. He has had excellent health. He is still nonverbal. He's not potty trained, but he's in the school system. And everybody has just been very helpful and worked with him. friends, neighbors, the kids in the school, the teacher in the school has got the children involved in being kind to him and working with him.
Oh, that's wonderful. Comment, Erin?
I'm just so glad to hear that the system works so well for your child and your grandchild and your family. And, it sounds like the supports and services that he needed were in place, and that you're able to feel like you're seeing progress, even if it's slow but steady progress.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one
of the other thing.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
His mother keeps up a huge notebook, and she has documented everything, every person that he has worked with from the very beginning, which is something that a person that has an autistic child needs to do. You need to keep the records and know who you're talking to and what you're talking about. There's a huge amount of paperwork involved.
Yeah, I you're not going to disagree with that, are you, Erin?
No, not at all. It's almost like another full-time job, I think, managing all of the resources and the paperwork and the services and making sure that everything's going the way it's supposed to. So I have such enormous respect for parents of children with disabilities because of all of the work they do above and beyond kind of the everyday challenges of parenting.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kathy. I want to give Janet in Milwaukee a chance to join us. Hi, Janet. Thank you for calling.
Hello, how are you?
Great.
I have a six-year-old relative with autism. How can I best interact with parent and child to support them?
And do you see them often, Janet, or?
At family gatherings.
Okay.
So I think this question comes up a lot in the families I work with in the treatment services program, and it's really thinking about, are you creating a warm, accepting environment for that child and that family? Do they feel welcome in your home? Do they feel like if their child is having a hard time or they're having a meltdown, that they've got the space to manage it? Talk with the parents before they come over. Are there things that you should put away or have available in their home? Are there foods that you know that this child likes to eat that are just going to help make that visit be more positive? And really being as non-judgmental as possible, because for many of the families that we work with, there's that feeling of like, what's going to happen, and I don't always know how others are going to respond. So if you can be a soft place to land for families and people that you love, that you're going to make their life just so much easier just by being kind and supportive.
And I was thinking about this, and touch, I think touch came up, and it's just something as simple, well, should I not give the child a hug, or should I be friendly? But questions like that, I think the parents should be able to answer those kinds of questions, Paula.
Yeah, no, I would say everything Erin was saying, and it's wonderful. I think families and friends can definitely, being curious and asking, because I think, like Erin was saying, families are going to really appreciate that your intent is to be helpful and make it a good environment. And some specific questions around, I think a lot of family gatherings, we hear a lot around food issues, either that kids don't like foods or smells. So just asking, I think, what, favorite foods, favorite activities, or our sounds, or, just all those preferences. So
I would also just throw in here that it's really hard for parents of a child with autism to get out of the house by themselves to get a break. So if you're in a position where you can have that child over and spend time with them one-on-one, so mom and dad can get a chance even to drink a cup of coffee while it's still warm, just really being somebody who can provide them with a little bit of a break or respite is going to go an enormous way for that family to be successful long-term.
And I can see, Janet mentioned family gatherings, and you can imagine that for some children with autism, that a gathering where you might have 15, suddenly you go from three or four people in your household to 15 people all talking loud and having a good time can be a problem. Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Janet. Appreciate the call. And Karen in St. Francis, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi, yes. I have been listening off and on, but I haven't been hearing specific signs or symptoms or behaviors that a child on the autism spectrum would exhibit.
Okay. Erin, do you want to start?
Sure. So some of the things that we look for are, does the child respond to their name? Do they have an interest in social interaction? You know, when kids are even very little, if you smile at babies, do they smile back at you? You want to look at how are they playing with toys and objects? Are they using them in the way that you would expect it to be typically used? So, you know, driving cars and along a track versus spinning the wheels, for example. So really thinking about how is this child interacting with the people in their life and the objects in their life.
Another thing, and we mentioned before, you know, watching for a common thing is families reporting delays in communication, children who maybe are not showing interest in peers, siblings the way other kids might, are other things we often
would late you're not speaking as soon as you might think is normal, or
that's certainly something that you wanted to test out. And I think, Larry, you alluded to this. You also want to make sure that there's not a problem with hearing. You know, so if you've got a child who's got chronic ear infections, they may have delayed speech, but not necessarily autism. But either way, you want to go back to your pediatrician and say, hey, this is what I've been reading. This is what I've experienced with my other children. This is what I know about child development. And I'm not seeing this with my child. Let's talk about next steps.
And I would add, so when parents, if you're concerned that your child's not meeting any milestones, again, being persistent, even if your doctor or pediatrician's not making referrals, or because the one thing we do know is that kids or families are reporting concerns and noticing delays, you know, prior to, you know, before the first year, yet kids are, on average are getting diagnosed around 4 years old. So I think we really want to make sure parents feel, you know, trust your gut, you know your kiddos really well, you know them best, and keep talking to folks.
Yeah. And Jenny, have you got a quick comment for us in Burlington?
Hi, yes. Actually, I think you pretty much just hit on what I wanted to tell parents. I have a 21-year-old son who was diagnosed through the Weissman Center many years ago at age 3. But I had a very, very difficult time getting my pediatrician to agree with the diagnosis and to help us get through the paperwork process in order to get treatment for him. He did wind up with 3 years of ABA therapy through the Wisconsin Early Autism Project, and is now a junior in college. He's been to Spain for a semester on his own. But he had to have an aide with him all the way through sixth grade, and was, you know, someone that really needed a lot of support. So that early intervention, what a difference it makes. And parents, if you have a child you think is having issues, don't take no for an answer. Keep pushing, because you know when your child is not meeting those milestones, and when there's reason for concern.
Jenny, thank you so much for calling. I wanted to get you on the air because I could see on the screen what you were going to be talking about, and it's probably a good way to end. But the Weissman Center, you've got a website. There are all kinds of resources available out there for people.
Yes, and people definitely can visit it. We have many events, including our Day with the Experts, which we have for autism, Down syndrome, cochlear implants, and cerebral palsy. And our upcoming one in November will be the Day with the Experts.
And when is in November, people can sign up for that?
People can start. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, so in November is the Day with the Experts, CP, cerebral palsy. In January is the Day with the Experts on Autism. And if you're not able to get to the Weissman Center, they also live broadcast it.
And so go to the Weissman Center, and that's spelled W-A-I-S-M-A-N. Mm-hmm. So Weissman or Weissman?
Weissman.
I know it's pronounced Weissman, but a lot of people pronounce it Weissman.
Yes.
But W-A-I-S-M-A-N Center. Go online to that, and you'll find out about those upcoming events that you can attend free, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah, free. Well, Erin and Paula, thank you so much. I hope we have a chance to meet again. And I really appreciate you being here today and for all you do.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Erin Thompson and Paula Perez from the Weissman Center Autism and Development Disabilities Clinic at UW Hospitals, our guests today. Thanks for listening.